months into a new Democratic presidency, the GOP is trying to solidify its identity in a post-Trump world that sometimes doesn't feel very post-Trump at all.
I fully support the audit in Arizona. We want transparency and answers for the American people. What are the Democrats so afraid of? Transparency is a good thing. We need to fix these election security issues going into the future.
That's Elise Stefanik, New York Republican House member, baselessly talking about 2020 election issues in Arizona. And no, it's not from January. That's from this week on Steve Bannon's podcast. Stefanik is far from the fringe right now. She's in line to assume a leadership role in the House if the GOP ousts conference chair Liz Cheney. Cheney, we should note, voted with Donald Trump more often than Stefanik. And Cheney wrote an op-ed this week essentially pleading for the soul of her party. Cheney, of course, voted to impeach then-President Trump in 2020, and she has been steadfast and accurate in her rejection of the idea that the 2020 election was stolen by Democrats. Cheney wrote in the Washington Post, quote, "The Republican Party is at a turning point, and Republicans must decide whether we are going to choose truth and fidelity to the Constitution."
I think she's got real problems. I've had it with her. It's, you know, I've lost confidence.
That is Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader. He was caught on a hot mic this week talking with a Fox News host about the situation. Plainly, there is momentum toward Cheney no longer being out front. The GOP clearly finds itself searching for both its identity and who should represent that. So what does all this tell us about where the GOP is right now and where it might be headed? To answer that and more, we're joined by Ali Mutnick, campaigns reporter at Politico. Ali, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for NBC News. Sahil, nice to have you here as well.
Hi, Lizzie. Good to join you.
Sahil, I actually want to start with this question that is, why does who the conference chair is matter? That seems like this like minutia thing that feels very Washington. I wonder if you could explain why this position is so important in terms of what the GOP stands for.
It's an interesting question, Lizzie, because I bet the vast majority of Americans don't know who the conference chairs are on either the Democratic side in the majority or the minority side with the Republicans. But it is an important position because this person is in charge of messaging. And when you're in the minority, messaging is pretty much all you have to fight the majority. You don't have a whole lot of legislative levers to get your bills through. And the majority, especially in the House of Representatives, can steamroll you and on all occasions. So what Liz Cheney right now is in charge of is messaging for the House Republican Conference, how they depict the Democratic efforts ranging from economics to voting rights to gun control to immigration. And that has a huge impact on how the Democrats are seen in certain parts of the country and what the image of the Republicans becomes going forward. So there's a symbolic element and a very tangible element to this role.
So, Ali, it seems like Liz Cheney has become more vocally anti-Trump in the wake of the January 6th Capitol attack. But has she always been anti-Trump? But can you help me kind of parse out where she stands?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cheney has always been her own person, right? And she came out of a different Republican era, right? She was a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. She's the daughter of a very famous vice president of the Bush era. And so she's always been outspoken on where her views have diverged from President Trump, especially on foreign policy. She also was, open about the fact that she believed people needed to be wearing masks. And there were some subtle jabs here and there. But I think, like for a lot of people, January 6th was the final straw for her. She felt that that was where she needed to fully break with Trump. And I think she just has a long view of the Republican Party and she didn't see Trump in it anymore.
Yeah, to me, it's shocking as someone who covered politics for a long time that someone would publicly break with the Cheney family. You know, if you told me that in 2003, I would have sort of fallen over. Sahil, where would you say the power center in the Republican Party lies right now?
Well, it's clearly with Trump. There's no real doubt about that in my mind. I think the party has made up its mind as to which direction it wants to go in, and that's continuing to embrace the ideas, the attitudes, and the vision, such as it is, of the former president. And that includes, most notably right now, echoing his falsehoods and the lies about the stolen election in 2020. That is top of his mind. That is the issue that he speaks about most frequently when he appears. And it is the issue that he's put out multiple statements on as recently as last week, which kind of triggered this whole back and forth with Liz Cheney because she felt the need to respond to him. There is a feeling among critics of the Republican Party and some within, and there has been for a long time, that Trump was kind of an aberration, that, you know, he was this alien invasive force that just took over the party, and that once he was gone, they would move back in a more traditionally conservative direction. That does not appear to be the case, and that resoundingly appears to not be the case, to the point where someone like Liz Cheney is no longer welcome in House Republican leadership because she does not fit that mold.
Allie, we played this sound from Elise Stefanik from New York as a possible replacement for Cheney. One of the things I find fascinating about her is that she has not always been a vocal Trump supporter. Tell me about her.
That's true. I mean, Stefanik had her rise as a GOP moderate. She flipped in a district that Obama won in 2012 and 2014 in upstate New York. And, you know, she was a protege of Paul Ryan and Karl Rove and Mitt Romney. And that was sort of her Republican pedigree. But as her district took a really big swing towards Trump, you know, so did she. And that's sort of part of the politics of it.
Do you think this is about just ensuring their own reelection, Allie?
Well, so I think her district allows her to lean into sort of, you know, how she feels about Trump. So Obama won this district, her district, by 6 points. Trump won it by 14 4 years later. So she was following the voters of her district, but then it's also part of, you know, as Sahil said, that's where the power in the Republican Party is. Elise Stefanik saw her rise defending Trump during his first impeachment from the House Intelligence Committee. And she was rewarded in a huge way by small dollar donations. She consistently raises $1 million every 3 months because people like, you know, the way she speaks about Trump and the way she defends him.
Sahil, I have been listening to the two of you, and it makes sense to some degree that Republican representatives would be all in with Trump when they look at the base of their party. But I think that what might be hard for some people to get their heads around is that they are still behind him, or maybe even more behind him in the wake of January 6th.
That is right. And there was a real moment of consternation within the party about January 6th and his role in it. As Liz Cheney is quick to remind everyone, Kevin McCarthy himself said after the Capitol attack by supporters of President Trump that the former president had some responsibility for that attack. That was not an uncommon position at the time. There were many Republicans, including later on Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, who had also put some blame at the feet of Trump. And there was a real moment then when Democrats quickly moved to impeach him.
Are they just like pretending that didn't happen, or what's going on?
Well, they would rather not talk about it. So essentially, yes, they would like to move past it. They would like to talk as little about it as possible because it upsets the former president. It upsets his supporters. And they would rather just talk about the Democrats. And Mitch McConnell has pretty much moved off of that and is doing that, which is why he is more secure in his role than Liz Cheney. But Liz Cheney refuses to give it up. And look, I talked just a few days ago to someone who knows the Cheneys, a Republican who knows both Dick Cheney, the former vice president, and Liz Cheney. And what this person said was she is stubborn, just like her dad. If she feels strongly about something, she's going to keep speaking up, and regardless of the political consequences.
Allie, I think about the 2022 midterm elections, and one thing that is important to Republicans in terms of winning the majority are these narrow slices of suburban voters. Where do those suburban voters, and often we're talking about white women and white non-college age men, where do they lean? Are they with Trump? Are they movable? What are they thinking now?
I mean, it's a really great question. I feel like we've spent the last 4 years trying to figure out what's going on in the suburbs with Trump. So, you know, you look at 2020, and in a lot of these suburban districts, if you break down the presidential results by the district level, Trump did not win them. He was under 50 in a lot of them. He was, you know, maybe just 2 or 3 points ahead of Biden in a district where, you know, Mitt Romney had gotten double digits in 2012. But Republicans picked up seats in the House. And in a lot of districts, Republicans won re-election. or won seats, even if Trump didn't do really well. That suggests that there's some openness in these suburbs to voting for Republicans who aren't Trump. But that's part of the problem for the Republican Party, is that they still need those voters who love Trump, that are really activated by Trump. And so they can't stray too far away from him, or they risk those people not showing up in the midterms. They're already at risk of not showing up because Trump himself isn't on the ballot. That's what Democrats were, part of how they were able to take the House back in 2018. So they've got to hold together these, you know, suburban people who aren't super sold on Trump, while also bringing Trump's base out with them. That's their winning formula.
Sahil, I'm curious about why Liz Cheney is on the receiving end of these kinds of vocal attacks. We've seen Senator Mitt Romney and occasionally Senator Susan Collins oppose Trump. Obviously, they're in the Senate, so they're up for re-election less often. Their seats are more secure. But why is Cheney such a lightning rod, do you think?
A couple of reasons for this. The first is she has been arguably the most outspoken. When the former president, Donald Trump, put out a statement several days ago, essentially repeating his falsehoods about the 2020 election, Cheney responded on Twitter within an hour, called it the big lie, and said Republicans need to not echo that and need to dissociate themselves from that. She has gone out of her way to debunk this because she feels strongly about it in a way that many Republicans, the vast majority really, are content to just let it pass and not wade into this crossfire. So that's one of the reasons she has more shrapnel on her, because she has been willing to pick this fight with Donald Trump. The other reason, the other theory that's been floated, is she's a woman. And yeah, some of her former colleagues and current colleagues privately would say that women tend to be more of a lightning rod when they step into the arena than men.
Is she, Allie, going to face any consequences in her own state during the midterm re-elections? I mean, she is, after all, a Cheney in Wyoming, pretty much as close to a political dynasty there as you can get.
Well, that's what's going to be so interesting, is that Trump is turning this into the ultimate test case. You know, he won Wyoming with 70% of the vote. He is taking a personal interest in recruiting someone to take Liz Cheney out. And, you know, Trump's super PAC, another Republican group that opposes Cheney, the Club for Growth, have released polling showing that she's deep underwater in Wisconsin because they're so loyal to Trump. But, you know, Trump has to come in. His team is, you know, currently recruiting in the state to find one candidate that everyone can rally behind. Because if it's a splintered field against her, she does have a better shot of coming back. But this is a really big, I mean, Trump's legacy is on the line here.
We're still obviously talking about Trump, but that no one else seems to have emerged to kind of command the same kind of widespread attention within the GOP party as a potential kind of standard bearer. And I guess that makes me think about the next presidential election. Sahil, do you see anyone else who might be seen as a Republican challenger to Trump in the next presidential primary?
I don't doubt that some Republicans will try, but at the moment, they are likely to do about as well as they did in the 2020 Republican primaries, which is maybe a few percent here or there. As it's looking, the 2024 Republican nominee is either going to be Donald Trump or someone who aligns with him, who may or may not have explicitly have his support, but someone who hails from that wing of the party. And there have been suggestions that it could be someone like former Vice President Mike Pence, if he gets right with these voters. He's clearly trying. Someone like Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, is very much in the Trump mold and cut from the same cloth, pursuing the same kind of vision and strategy and governing attitude of going after the left and angering the left, owning the libs, as they call it on the right, as a governing philosophy. So it's likely to be someone from that mold, as the way the current political currents are moving.
I am sitting here thinking about all the other things that might be in voters' minds. The pandemic, the economy. On Friday, we just got a jobs report that did not look so great. Are we still going to be talking for Republican primary voters primarily about Trump and Trumpism, or do they think about these other things too?
I mean, it's a good question. I think, you know, Democrats have spent the entire Trump era running against Trump, turning Trump into the boogeyman and motivating voters that way. And now that they have united government, they're really trying to score some wins and to have something to go out and talk about, you know, on the midterms that's not Trump. So, you know, look, we've put shots in arms, we've put stimulus checks in your pocket. you know, Biden really wants to make moves on infrastructure. Yeah. I mean, I think that their goal is to try to take the conversation away from Trump when they can.
Ali Mutnick is a campaigns reporter at Politico. Sahil Kapoor is a national political reporter for NBC News. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Good to join you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.